Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the Swamp. Today's video will be the last one reviewing the scariest stories from 2018. It's about time to take on 2019 full force. If you have a story that you'd like to share in a future video, be sure to send it in at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your stories. In the middle of nowhere, a small town seemed to lurk with scary things that never seemed to leave their borders. These 15 subscribers sent in their allegedly true, creepy encounters within small towns and in the middle of nowhere. These ones will freak you out. Whether you haven't heard them yet because you're new to the channel or you just want to hear them again, this is the perfect video for you. Now, let's get into these tales of terror. Unknowingly to the naked eye, I'm a private law enforcement officer, in which I enforce state laws underneath independent contact. Unlike public or urban officers who are tax-paid and work underneath the government, think of me as being similar to a personal attorney instead of an appointed attorney, if you were to ever get in a sticky situation. My unnerving doubts about my obscure occupation started 4 years after I regrettably accepted a seemingly simple contact from a middle-aged Eastern male stockbroker who merely requested a private escort across the state in an unmarked vehicle. On the phone, the low-tone man oddly asked only two uncomfortable and uncommon questions or requests, which were, may we not take any back roads, and may we not make any stops whatsoever, please and thank you. After he hung up without saying goodbye, I knew right then that this was not going to be some sort of contact for a novice officer such as myself. But after reviewing the massive payout, $7,000, I would have been a complete fool to at least not meet this shady guy. And to note, I'm no fool. At least, I thought so at the time. A couple weeks later, 2 hours before midnight, I alone meet the nerve-shocked guy at an airport approximately 225 miles from his desired destination, which I was unfamiliar with. He did not greet me, nor did he see anything beyond this. Remember our agreement, no back roads and no stops, please and thank you. What the heck was wrong with this guy? Either way, I allowed this weird dude into my unmarked car and we headed off. After about an hour or so, and after turning into our exit ramp, I looked into my side mirrors and saw two black and tinted vans ease into my blind spots on my opposite sides. This didn't draw a red flag until I glanced into my rearview mirror and saw the guy, with deep red eyes, oddly leaning downwards in his seat, as if he didn't want to be seen by people in the black vans. After about 5 minutes or so, the black tinted vans kept in pace with us. The guy's phone rang, and shortly after he answered it, he sharply said no. My red flag was up straight up, but not waving just yet, if you catch my drift. But that was short-lived because 6 to 7 minutes later, the guy's phone rung again, yet he refused to answer. And after that moment, the crap began to hit the fan. The van on my left side aggressively sped up until it was ahead of me, and afterward it recklessly cut into my lane before slowing down. This freaked me out so much that I didn't have the chance to notice that the van on my right side had lightly rammed itself into my driver's side which forced me into the next foremost lane. All the while, the guy's phone is persistently ringing, as if it was possessed. My red flag was waving, like a little punk now. Instead of being forced into the next exit, I slammed on my brakes, with the mindset of escaping the pinning grip of the vans. However, the van on our right side managed to ram the control of the front wheels from me, which sent our vehicle into an intense but controllable spin. I managed to regain control of the vehicle before speeding off into the opposite way of the pursuing vans. As our car sped down the empty highway, I eagerly yelled at the guy, freaking dial 911, but he just sat there in utter shock looking at his possessed phone. So I called 911, and they said to stay on the phone as they dispatched state troopers to our area. However, before I knew it, one of the vans attempted to rear-end our car before the van side-ended us, which was enough to send us off the road, into the quickly approaching deep woods, and therefore forcing me to a sudden stop. The van surrounded and blocked us in, without a way of escape that didn't involve fleeing into the dark, thick woods. Before the van doors opened, I eerily felt an agonizing pop in my ear. The guy in the back seat had shot the rear view window before climbing out and fleeing into the devouring woods. More than a small gang of men were in hot pursuit of the man. As for me, I was dragged out of the car, punched firmly in my side gut, and then ordered to drive away or get beaten. At first, I chose the latter, but after a few more manic gangsters got involved, I wisely chose the smart option. Terrified, I fled along the highway until I met the troopers before heading to the hospital. I told them my entire story and they investigated. A couple of arrests were made, but none of the men arrested were nationals, so they could not be charged with first-degree murder.
Me and my partner are both 26, and this happened about 6 years ago. We both live in northwest of England. At the time, we were living in Warrington. Not really the best place to live, but it's a long story how we ended up there, but we ended up going there as a last minute decision. Me and my girlfriend lived in an upstairs flat. At the start, everything was fine. The room downstairs was okay, but a bit strange at first, and clearly drank too much at night and slept all day. The couple that moved next door a year after we moved in were alright and we got along just fine. And another couple that moved next door, but one were nice but two-faced, but that doesn't really matter. The flat we lived in, it used to be one house, but was converted into two flats. He had the top floor. Our stairs out of the house led onto the backyard area. Our back door faced next door's door, and the crazy woman downstairs door faced out onto the front. So to get from her door to ours, she had to go outside, walk around the house through a large gate and then up a little alleyway to our door. Next door had a large window that looked out into the alleyway. Anyway, the crazy all happened about a year after we moved in. The woman downstairs was in her late 40s, but the drugs she did made her look a lot older. It all started when someone started to scratch my car every night. We would go to bed, wake up, and someone would have scratched my car. We didn't know who it was at the time, so we asked neighbours and no one knew. We started to call the police to set a police log and hopefully they would do more patrols in the area, but they didn't. Every night the same would happen. Sometimes we waited up and nothing would. One night we were in bed and the woman downstairs started screaming, "Help! Fine, call the police." She was shouting as if she'd lost it and we thought maybe someone was hurt. She was screaming for like half an hour, and I had to be up early for work. Me and my missus thought she needed the police to help, so we called them and they turned up, but she went quiet. The following day after I got home from work, the woman downstairs went out and gave me the death stare as she left. I went upstairs and didn't think anything more about it. Later that night, there was an almighty crash downstairs. Someone had smashed downstairs windows. A couple of days later, after her windows were fixed, we went into the backyard to let our little dog out, where we were outside for about 20 minutes, and then the crazy woman poked her head out the window and said, "I hope your dog has eaten the poison I have put in the bread for you, you dirty fucking scumbags." We picked our dog up and went in. Luckily enough, she never eats anything she finds outside. We didn't take her threat seriously. The following day, the next door's dog got really sick for no reason, apart from that they had eaten the bread that someone had been putting out. We didn't find this part out until later. They were okay about a week after. All went quiet for about a week. The next door neighbour came home in his work van and parked it at the front of the flat one night, and someone scratched the word scumbag into the side of it. They knew it was the woman downstairs, as she had been arguing with them for a while apparently. The following night, she got worse. She spent ages getting stoned and smoking so much the smell was coming up through our floorboards. We went to bed as I had to be up for work at 9. Later that night, she and her guy friend came outside screaming and shouted up at our flat so loud it woke us up. They were screaming horrible things at us and threatening to kill us, and naturally we were scared, so we called the police. They came and took the guy home and told her to go to bed. After they left, we were going back to sleep when all of a sudden we hear a banging on the door. So I got up slowly and went to the door in the dark. There was no way I was opening the door at this time of night, and I looked through the spy hole and couldn't see anyone. Then I heard, "Open up please, it's PC Jones Warrington, police." I was about to open the door when all of a sudden she came to the door and banged again. This time I could see who it was. And guess what? It wasn't the police. After about 20 minutes of this happening, she stopped with the whole "it is the police" thing and started shouting threats at us through the letterbox. I sat at the top of the stairs and recorded everything she said on my phone. She even said, "I won't scratch your car, but I know someone who will, and they will come round and pay you a visit." Then she went quiet for about 5 minutes, then started again. This happened all night. The following morning, the real police came out to us and they wanted to question me, wanting to know why I had attacked the woman from downstairs, and wanted to know why I had smashed her face into the wall. I was shocked and had no idea what they were on about. I played them the recording from last night, and then they left to continue their investigations. As they left, the couple next door came out and asked if they could have a word with the police officer about what happened last night. Apparently, when the woman was going crazy, they were in the kitchen and had a front row seat. In the 5 minutes she went quiet, she walked to the side of the door and hit her own face against the brick wall, and then carried on shouting. But after each time she closed the letterbox, she would hit her face against the wall again and again. Safe to say, the police were as shocked as I was. 2 nights later, I was in work. At about 10-ish, she came outside and my missus called me and said, "Don't come home yet, the woman next door was out on her phone talking to someone and walking around our flat pointing up and taking photos." My missus had no idea why. All she kept saying is, "I know she's up there alone right now and I will help you get rid of her. It would be easy." As soon as I pulled up, she ran back in. A few nights later, she got a big Rottweiler off someone for, in her own words, protection. That same night, she got into an argument with the guy next door. So she opened the door and said, "Go on boy, get him, get him." The dog then ran out and licked him. Safe to say, she wasn't too pleased. Later that night, there was a German Shepherd and his owner walking past when the woman downstairs opened the door again and let the dog run out for no reason. It attacked the German Shepherd and locked its jaw around the dog's neck. She ran back in and locked the door and left the dog there. It took 5 people to pull these 2 dogs apart and find out where the dog came from. The German Shepherd's neck was a bad mess. A few nights later, she got rid of the dog. I was upstairs in the kitchen one night with the lights off, on my phone. It was winter and there was a little snow on the ground. I heard her slam her door, then watched her as she walked up on the road and turned around and looked up at her kitchen window. She then walked over to my car and pulled out her keys and ran them all along up one side. And then she went and walked around into the middle of the road, looked up at the kitchen again, checked for cars coming, then did the same down the other side of my car. My jaw dropped as I watched this unfold. When I snapped back to reality, I realised what I had just seen, and I ran downstairs so angry and my blood pumping so fast I was shaking. However, all that was left of her when I reached my car was her bike tracks where she had left. My girlfriend made me calm down and to not do anything crazy. So naturally I called the police again and they came out, took down what I said and just told me unless she admitted to doing it, there wasn't a lot they could do. All I could do was find out how much it would cost to get my car fixed and if she admitted what she had done, they could try and get her to pay. Long story short, to get my car fixed it would have cost over £3,000. I never got it fixed and she never admitted to it. Not long after this, we moved out and lived with family for a couple of months, just until we found somewhere else. We couldn't take it anymore and we moved our stuff out into a van with the help of family. She sat in the bedroom looking out the window at us every now and again, like she had done nothing wrong. This woman was totally crazy. When I was growing up, I didn't think anyone was that bad and that everyone should be given a chance. But this woman changed everything I believed in. Just as a word of warning to everyone. Never trust your next door neighbour because you never really know what is going on behind closed doors.
So before I start, I should let you guys know that this is completely true, as I have no reason to lie. This house is on the border of North Carolina and Virginia, but for the sake of my family's privacy, I won't state exactly where. It's safe to say that I was in the middle of nowhere, with no neighbors, no stores, or paved roads, for 30 miles at the very least. Anyways, on with the story. I had been on a 2-month-long trip to England, taking time off from life. While I was gone, my father had purchased an old farmhouse down in the country as a getaway place. Only a week after I had arrived home, I made plans to go check out the house. About another week later, I realized exactly how far out the house was from everything. It was a bit unnerving, but I brushed it off and made myself enjoy the drive. But from the exact moment I exited my car in the driveway of that house, I felt as if I was being watched. I lugged my bags into the house and started looking around, checking out the rooms and the outside deck. After exploring, I settled in for the night, and nothing happened. Actually, for the first time in 3 days, nothing happened at all. Everything seemed normal, besides the feeling of something watching you constantly. It was on the 4th day, late in the evening, that I would finally find out what was watching me. I had just finished eating dinner, and was at my sink, starting to wash my dishes. As I looked out the window, I saw a coyote standing in the tree line about 30 yards away. It was standing on its hind legs, with its right paw against a tree like it was propping itself up. I froze, not really out of fear, but shock. I had no idea what I was seeing. I was never the outdoors type, but I knew coyotes did not do this. I finally snapped out of it and walked out to the patio doors to the deck to get a better look. As I walked outside, I noticed that it had lowered its paw and was now just standing with its nose in the air like it was smelling. Now this is where things get really crazy. All of a sudden, after about 6 seconds of me staring at it, it lowered its head and started running straight towards me. Now, I know this sounds unbelievable, but it's true. Like some sort of cartoon. It was running on its back legs as fast as a coyote would. I was startled, and all I could say, "What the heck are you?" before it started scrambling up the steps, falling in its hurry to get up them. I ran back inside and slammed the patio door shut behind me. Through the long plastic blinds on the door, I could see it. It was standing on all four legs, just staring at me, seemingly smiling. I yelled at it and told it to freak off, but it didn't move or change. Its expression stayed the same. I went to the furthest room from the door and tried to forget about it, telling myself anything that would make me feel better. After about an hour, I was calm enough to exit the room, but as soon as I did, I hear it. It was mocking me, over and over, in a raspy voice that sounds kind of like a grown man trying to learn English. The words are jumbled at first, but become perfectly clear by the fifth or sixth time I heard it. All I can do is just stand still and try to locate where it's coming from, and I finally do. It's coming from the patio door, the same door it was earlier. I creeped over to the door, and as gently as I could, peeled one of the plastic blinds aside. What I saw changed everything. I was looking towards the ground, expecting to see a talking coyote. Instead, in the dim light shining over from behind me, I saw a man, standing a solid foot and a half taller than me, with white skin, covered by what looked to be like deer fur. Its eyes were all white, almost bright enough to shine in the darkness. It stared at me with its head tilted to the side for a few seconds, then yelled, seemingly louder than any noise I've ever heard. It was loud enough to leave my ears ringing. Stunned, I walked backwards towards the kitchen as he slammed his hands against the glass sliding door, hard enough to start sending cracks through the entire door. Seeing this, my flight or fight instinct kicked in. He was between my car and myself, so there was no escape, which meant I was fighting. All I had were some flares from the roadside emergency kit and a fillet knife from the kitchen. Those would have to work. Just as I started to devise a plan, the patio door shattered, the sound of glass falling as all I could hear as I was expecting to see this thing come through the broken door. But, oddly enough, it just stood outside the door, as if some sort of force was keeping it from coming in. I cracked a flare and threw it through the door, attempting to try to ward this thing off. As the flare landed beside it, it broke eye contact with me. I knew that moment was my last hope to charge it with the knife. If I die, at least I'll go without a fight. As I got within a few feet of it, it turned and disappeared behind the flame, burning bright and loud. Through the shadow of the moonlight, I could see it walking across the yard towards the tree line. As it walked, it slowed as its human body cracked and morphed into the exact shape of a white-tailed deer. As it vanished into the forest, I felt sick before I could even think what I was looking at. Suddenly I was doubling over, puking and crying my eyes out. After a few minutes, I put myself together, grabbed my car keys, my phone, and left without getting any of my bags. It was a 10-hour drive home, and I made it in less than 8. My family was surprised to see me back home, and after I explained everything, they acted like I was crazy. That was until they saw that I didn't have my bags and how upset I was. My father decided that he would wait until morning to go back and I would show him. That night, I did not sleep. I could only sit on my bed and scour the internet to find something about what I saw. That's when I stumbled upon reports of skinwalkers in the National Forest an hour away from the house. Now, until the second time I encountered this creature, I wasn't sure if I was crazy or not. I've encountered this thing 4 times now, and I plan on sharing those with you guys as well.
This happened when my dad was 16, all the way back in 1976. Him and my Uncle Nigel were very outgoing and liked to explore to keep themselves occupied. When the summer of 76 came around, my dad finished school. He wanted to do one big bit of adventuring before he began work. The Penning Way. For those who do not know, the Penning Way is a 270-mile walkway in Britain that, depending on which way you walk, starts in just south of Scotland and basically cuts through the middle of England and finishes in the Midlands. It usually takes around a 3 to 4 week walk. With a long summer to fill, my dad and 15-year-old Uncle Nigel and my dad's friend Russ were dropped off in Scotland by my great-grandfather to begin their hike. The first week went swimmingly. They met some nice locals who even cooked them food and gave them room to sleep in, and generally enjoyed this whole new level of freedom entrusted upon them. They mainly camped in clear areas, but one day, they decided to cover an extra 5 miles in order to reach a village as they needed to buy some more food and get spare tents. They stumbled into a village around 6 p.m. and saw the local pub was opening. After relaxing in the pub with some drinks, my dad tells me that the owner probably knew they were underage, but wanted all the business they could get. The owner offered to let the guys camp out in the back field of their pub. The landlady/wife said the owner seemed oddly hesitant at first, looking a bit concerned and having a bit of a word with her husband in private. However, Yorkshire hospitality seemed to override any doubt she had after a night of heavy drinking with the locals. They resided to their tent. My dad says they were using an oil lantern hooked to a center of the tent as a light source, and when they turned it off, they left it hanging, which is important, not only for what happened next, but also what happened the next day. My dad woke up and turned off the oil light while debating to get up and having a piss in the field, seeming as the owners had been nice in letting them camp out there, when he heard a door creak open from the creek shut. There were no footsteps, so my dad had to put it down to an old shed or something. After a few seconds, however, the sound of feet landing on grass became progressively audible until they stopped right outside the tent. My dad thought it was the owner checking in on us, and he went to unzip the tent. The owner fully unzipped it. My dad said the weird thing about this was that he didn't have a shirt on, just some slippers and night trousers. After my dad asked what he was doing, he stuttered out some excuse about hearing a growl and went to check if the boys were okay and safe. There was no growl, as the only sound in the last 5 minutes was the door, the footsteps, and the unzipping of the tent. The guy weirdly emphasized the need for a good sleep before hiking and intrusively tapped on the oil light, asking for it to be turned off. He walked off, letting off a frustrated sigh and nearing the house and closed the door behind him. Morning comes and the owner's wife makes the boys some breakfast while they pack up their stuff. The owner takes down the tent for them and takes off somewhere in his 4x4 without coming back to the house. They thank the woman and tell her husband thank you as well. She says that when she figures out when he comes back, that he will tell her. They come to their designated camping spot, just next to a small stream, around an hour and a half early, and decide to have a longer rest after walking around 130 to 140 miles over the past 8 to 9 days. They pull out the tent and find lots of small holes, all about a pen's width and wide. What's weird about this is my dad described the size of it as holding a pen while telling me this. Everyone looks confused, and my dad rationalizes this by the man telling him about an animal last night. It must have come back and nibbled on the tent. Yes, that explains it, sure. Russ suggests they walk back to a different village around 2 miles back and try to get another tent. They leave the now useless tent as a marker for their site and walk back to the village. Their luck, a shop clearly targeting walkers, is open. Unfortunately, they didn't have any tents, but they decide to buy tape and cover the holes for tonight, and hope to find a new tent somewhere soon. When walking back, the sun had begun to set and it was quite dark. Moonlight mainly guiding them back down the path. When they returned to their site, they couldn't believe it. Their tent was set up for them, but it was on fire, completely engulfed in flames. They threw the water in their bottles over the tent and used the stream water to fill them, and eventually doused the fire. When they looked inside the tent, their oil lamp glass had been smashed, and someone had followed them, set up their tent, and waited for them to return before smashing the oil lamp and, in turn, lighting up the tent in flames. My dad told me that there really isn't an explanation except for the pub owner. He was stopping doing whatever he was planning on doing with my dad being awake and decided to take some fucked up form of revenge by sending a message. At first, I totally didn't believe my dad and thought he was trying to scare me, but upon referencing the burning tent incident in a phone to my Uncle Nigel, he instantly started rambling about how weird it was. My Uncle Nigel does not lie. I went camping with three of my buddies, John, Bennett, and Kyle. We do this every year. It's kind of a bro trip to reconnect with each other. We were all fresh out of college and decided to go to our yearly camping trip in August. We are from Oregon and ended up camping in the woods there like we usually do at the same point. The first day was great. We set up our spot, explored the area, and by the time the sun was setting, we set up a campfire and made dinner. After a few too many beers and some s'mores, we decided to go to sleep. It was a perfect way to end the day. Our second day was basically the same thing. Hiking, food, one too many beers. But this night, we ended up being not so perfect. I remember watching some videos on YouTube, and we were laughing and it was interesting. As we finished the rest of the beers, we were wrestling around with each other like guys do, and John stopped messing around and froze. Everyone was confused, but John claimed he heard something nearby. I told him it was most likely a squirrel, and he said, "No, it was most definitely not." He was scaring me at this point, and I decided to resume the tackling session, and I took him down. We forgot about the whole thing until about 10 minutes later. We were tired from wrestling and joking around, so we decided to put the fire out and head into the tent. We had a 6-person tent for anybody wondering, so we were all in one tent. Just as our only light source besides our flashlights went out, I heard a slight cackle. I assume it was one of those boys because we were all clearly a bit buzzed, so everything is fine. I wanted to see what was so funny, so I turned the flashlight directly into Bennett's face. I thought he was the one laughing. Bennett's face was white as a ghost. He looked at me and said, "Did you guys hear that?" I said, "The laughing?" And Kyle said, "That wasn't you." We were all shaken and decided to go into the tent, silent. As we got into the tent, I pulled out an axe that I used to cut the wood. It was the only source of protection we had. I was on the very end of the tent with Kyle and John, and in the middle was Bennett. We were all silent, but I knew we were all wide awake after hearing the laughing. We weren't exactly at an actual campsite, where there were other people around. We just walked into the woods, found an open spot, and set up camp here. We were about a mile from our car with barely any cell signal, so I guess you could say we weren't exactly in the safest position if there was a crazy maniac around. I got tired, so I dozed off. I have no idea how long I was sleeping before I heard laughing again. It's hard to describe other than it sounded menacing. It was frozen, and I didn't move. I didn't even try to look over to see if my buddies were awake. The axe was under my pillow. As I mustered enough strength to move to get the axe, I saw what looked like someone's finger pressed up against the tent, circling around the tent. Someone was definitely outside, walking around our tent, laughing. When they got to the front part of where the tent entrance was, they stopped. About 5 seconds went by before the person furiously shook the tent and screamed. That's when I knew my buddies were awake as well, because Kyle screamed like a little girl right after. Whoever was behind the tent laughed and again walked off. We laid there the rest of the night, wide awake and definitely sober. We didn't want to move out of pure fear that whoever was out there was still there. When the sun came up, we packed up everything and walked back to our car. We still go camping every year, but this time we go to legit camping sites. I now bring a judge or a gun with me, and not just an axe. Whoever was outside our campsite could have easily been a deranged homeless person, psychopath serial killer, meth head, or just an asshole playing a prank on us. But I sure as hell won't camp in a rural place anymore. Stay safe out there. It's a dangerous world we live in.
This happened just last month, about a week before Halloween. Stuck at a job I absolutely hated, I cashed in on my vacation time for a week off. My younger brother Jesse and my friend Sean decided during the time off we'd go camp at an abandoned farm near where I live. I grabbed my K98, Mauser, and my survival bag and loaded up some supplies in my Jeep. My brother grabbed his Mosin Nagant carbine, and Sean brought along a 12-gauge shotgun. We then drove down the road to a gravel parking area in front of a popular swimming hole before parking and walking. As we climbed the hill leading to an abandoned farm, I noticed the sun had begun setting. I started to feel a little nervous. In an effort to calm my nerves, I carried my K98 in hand instead of slung over my shoulder. It took about 20 minutes to reach a farm, at which point we decided to camp in the hayloft in the barn. The only thing in the barn itself was a couple old, destroyed cars, including a Chevy Bel Air. It didn't take us long for us to set up our sleeping bags and an LED lantern. I ate an MRE and passed out quickly afterward. I awoke around 11:30 with a big urge to piss and noticed everyone else was sleeping. Groggy as hell, I sat up and began to stretch. Before fully standing, though, I heard footsteps outside. Thinking it was probably a deer or something, I stood up, grabbed my K98, and climbed down the hayloft to piss. I went to the bathroom next to the old Bel Air while I tried to wake myself up. As I headed back to climb up into the hayloft again, a pair of reddish eyes caught my attention. I quickly realized they were staring at me. I stand 5'9", so I froze when I realized these eyes were 3 feet higher than me. It was around now I noticed there were no crickets or other sounds from insects or anything you'd commonly hear around the area. The only sound was a raspy breathing and a light breeze. I quickly snapped back to my senses and climbed the hayloft, waking my brother and my friend once I reached the top. I explained to them we were being watched, at which point Sean loudly chambered a shotgun shell. I had the biggest gun, and so I climbed down first, and upon getting to the bottom, I noticed the eyes were still there. It was at this moment I caught wind of the worst smell I'd ever smelled in my life. It smelled like a mix of rotten carcass with piss and burned wire. By the time my brother and friend got to the bottom of the barn, the eyes had vanished once again. I walked outside yelling incoherently in German before firing 2 rounds into the ground, which sounded off like a cannon. After that, we said screw this, packed our stuff up, and left. While packing, we heard something say our names in sort of a garbled and distorted voice. We noped the heck out of there, walking before finally sprinting out of the place. We could hear a loud screeching behind us as we ran. We never returned to the abandoned farm since, and I really don't plan on ever going back. The following events took place in the Colorado Rockies in a small town known as Grand Lake. After the following encounter, I researched the area some more only to realize it was home to some of the most prevalent paranormal activity in the state. The story begins with myself, my family members who for privacy reasons will remain unnumbered, and my pet Australian shepherd named Rex. We arrived at our cabin at about 3 p.m. and unpacked our things for a weekend of camping. After a brief debate, it was decided I would sleep on an outcropping on the upper floor, with a futon, a small wooden box for my clothes, and a window overlooking the surrounding forest. During the night, I had this uneasy feeling, like I was being watched by something or someone. Chalking it up to me just being paranoid, I tried to push through it and sleep in the enveloping silence that the mountain was bringing. Throughout the next day, the feeling of being watched followed me everywhere I went, from hiking to shopping with my grandma in the village below. At about 11 at night, as I was beginning to drift off, I started feeling an overwhelming panic. I called my dog to my side in the hopes it would calm me down a little bit. The next few minutes were peaceful until Rex's ears perked up and he began growling at something outside the window. I shifted in my makeshift bed to see what it was and immediately regretted the decision. Outside my window stood a figure with horns. It stood upright on two legs, just like a person. I screamed, and my uncle immediately rushed in to see what was going on. I shook as I pointed at the window, trying to explain to him what was wrong. My uncle then quickly got his shotgun and went outside, only to return saying there was nothing out there. At this point in time, the other members of my family were out at my dad's friend's house, so none of them believed me when they returned and heard my story. The strangest part was in the light snow outside. The only tracks were from my uncle's frantic scrambling. There were no other tracks outside, and I have no idea what I saw outside my window that night. And to this day, it still freaks me out. I hope one day, though, I might figure out what was out my window that night. Maybe somebody in the comments can let me know. The following events took place about 2 years ago in Oklahoma. I hoped to get out of my house for a bit, and my friend Scotty, who lives in Yukon, Oklahoma, called and asked if I wanted to spend a few days with him. I immediately seized the opportunity to get away and got ready. I always bring my dogs when I drive, so I hope you'll forgive me naming all my dogs, but they play an important part in this story. Their names are as follows, and there is 9 total. Fatani, a Dutch Shepherd, Sarah, a Labrador Retriever mix, Kodiak, a Dalmatian mix, Grey Grey, a Pitbull, Elsa, a Bull Terrier mix, Penny, a Coonhound, Kyra, a Rottweiler, Jackson, a Terrier mix, and Benji, a Miniature Schnauzer. It's about a 55-minute drive from Dell City, Oklahoma to Yukon, Oklahoma, so I was planning on taking my time on the road, being I had all my dogs with me. All the dogs were asleep, except for Benji and Penny, who tend to be the most protective of my dogs. Not long into the ride, I stopped at a gas station to get food for myself and my dogs. I took Penny in the gas station with me as it was night out, and soon after paid for all the food and continued driving into the night. My radio on, I was cruising when I suddenly saw a set of headlights behind me. I pulled over to let them pass, but as I did, they pulled over as well. The person in the vehicle behind me got out and distinctly remember them wearing a red shirt. I rolled all my windows up and double-checked all my doors were locked. Before grabbing some pepper spray and a hammer I kept under my seat, the man soon approached my window and knocked, at which point I very slightly rolled the window down just a crack and asked how I could help him. I noticed his hands were in his pockets as he spoke, and that just gave me kind of creepy. He asked about all the dogs I have. I looked back, giving a signal with my head to let the dogs know there could be trouble. All at once, they perked up and stared at the man growling. The man, startled, backed off and ran to his car and sped off. I soon continued my journey, speeding the whole way. I had only 35 minutes till Scotty's, but I got there in about 14. When I arrived, I broke down in Scotty's arms and told him everything that had happened. Scotty then called the police and informed them of what happened. They sent 2 officers out and I filed a report and then left. On the 3rd day at Scotty's house, there was a news report about a man who had stabbed 2 young women. They showed the man's face and I broke down, telling Scotty that was the man I had encountered. I can only guess I was intended target, but he was spooked by all my dogs. I'm very thankful I had my dogs with me that night as they saved my life. Time went on and Scotty moved in with me, bringing his shotgun, pistol, rifle, and his German Shepherd, Dane. The man who stabbed the woman is in prison. Scotty and I are now engaged and expecting. I'll never forget that night, and how it could have turned out badly. But I'm so very grateful that it didn't. It seemed like any other day in my 7-year-old life. I was a scout in Denmark, and we had scouts on Mondays. When scouts ended, I asked my mom if I could go out on the playground, as scouts was at my school. She said yes, and so I excitedly ran out there and started playing with some football. Soon after, I saw a big swing began to move. I noticed a dark shadow on the swing, but I attempted to ignore it and kept playing. When I noticed it again, later on, I went over to see what it was. That's when I saw an old man, slowly swinging. I'd never seen the man before, so I knew he wasn't a teacher or anything like that. He looked to be in his mid-30s and had a faint voice as he spoke. "Hi, Adam." I was afraid of hearing this, but still, I responded. "Hi, what's your name?" The man replied, "Thomas." After about another minute or two, my mom began calling me, at which point I said bye to Thomas and went to my mom. My mom grabbed me and pulled me aside and asked who I was talking to. I told her his name was Thomas and that he was my new friend. My mom then walked me upstairs, we were in the basement at the time, and looked outside. Thomas was gone. We went home at about 8 p.m, at which point I went up to my room to read. I had an okay-sized room with my bed at an angle that allowed me to see the whole room. As I read, I heard something fall like a piece of paper sliding on the ground from a high place. I ignored it, but 5 minutes later I heard faint footsteps coming up the stairs. I ignored this as well, thinking it was just my mom coming upstairs. This is when a shadow appeared inside my room after opening my door, ever so slowly. There was a light next to my bed that I flicked on, and to my shock, I saw Thomas. I asked him how he got here, and he told me he was following our car home. After about 5 more minutes, we became friends, kind of, anyway. My mom walked in, and as she did, Thomas disappeared. I proceeded to inform my mother I was speaking to Thomas, and then asked her if she knew a Thomas. She told me her uncle was named Thomas, and he also went to school where I went to. If you're guessing, he was also a Boy Scout in his time. You'd be guessing right. Apparently he used to hang out there, at that swing. One day, while at that swing, he just seemingly vanished, never to be seen again. Although it scares me to think too much on it, I like to think his being on the swing is a way of enjoying the childhood he never got to fully live. A few years ago, my friends Jeff, Gabe, and I decided to take a hike in a secluded area we weren't super familiar with. I was 16 at the time, while Jeff was 18 and Gabe was 19 years of age. We were all into photography and hoped to get on top of a mountain where we were going up, in time to get some perfect shots of the sun setting. On the way up, we listened to some music and were warned by several groups on their way down to make sure we are off the mountain by dusk, due to prominent bear and mountain lion activity at night. We, of course, didn't take these warnings too seriously and continued up till we reached the top, and took the photos we climbed up so persistently for. The pics didn't turn out the best, and since the trail was on a loop, we decided to follow the trail to another side, hoping to get a better photograph. The thing we didn't realize was the loop was several miles long, and would take well beyond nightfall to get to the bottom of. After much walking, we realized our mistake. Unfortunately, by this point though, it was too late to correct that mistake. We were now in the middle of the Colorado wilderness with nothing to guide us but flashlights on our phones. My speaker eventually died, which was soon followed by a bizarre and surreal silence. At this point in time, we were all spooked and I held a pocket knife in my hand, close to trying to bring myself comfort. The silence soon broke to a sound of heavy boots stepping on gravel. A figure soon appeared over the hill, and as it got closer, I noticed a few odd things about something that I believed was a man. This man walked with no source of light to guide him in the night. He wore a black bandana over his face. He moved very slowly and very deliberately. As he passed us, I muttered a very audibly nervous, "Hey, but..." He never responded or so much as glanced in our direction. The night air had been quite cold, but I swear I felt an air drop a few degrees when he was next to us. We picked up the pace of our walk and didn't dare to look back for several minutes, at which point he was no longer in view. We tried to explain things away in an attempt to calm one another, but we just couldn't. When we finally got to the bottom of the mountain, we noticed ours was the only car that remained, making it unlikely anyone had been on the mountain. To this day, we cannot explain what happened and get goosebumps any time we think about that night. I am a 20-year-old female who lives in Michigan. I was 16 at the time when the following events took place. I'm a huge athletic nerd who goes hiking almost every single day. On the day in question, I drove to the hiking trail I go to almost every time I hike. When I arrived, I saw a creepy guy looking to be in his 30s, but me being the stubborn and dedicated hiker I am, I began down my trail, ignoring the man as I began to jog. I was about 200 to 300 yards into my hike when I decided to take a break. That was when I heard a scream that made my heart drop and turned to see that creepy guy from before in full sprint heading at me. I bolted as fast as I could, but the guy was running so fast he was gaining on me, which is saying something as I'm very fast. My pursuer ran like he had taken 2 shots of steroids, and I screamed before cutting a sharp turn into the woods, before rushing towards the parking area. I could hear the man's footsteps as I ran deeper through the woods. As I approached the parking lot, however, I realized the footsteps were getting slower. Upon arrival at the parking lot, I immediately took out my cell phone and called the cops. It wasn't too long after they arrived and searched the area that they found the man that was chasing me. He was a 37-year-old homeless man who was apparently carrying a butcher knife in his coat pocket. To this day, I'm very thankful I took ROTC in high school and that I hiked so often, as otherwise, he'd likely have had an energy advantage over me, and I likely would have been murdered or something like that. This happened in November of 2014, in northern Minnesota. The nearest town would be Cook. I will start with a little backstory. We own 160 acres that butts up to Net Lake Indian Reservation. It's a very desolate place. If someone were to get lost and walk north or west, they wouldn't hit a road for at least 50 miles. Firearms deer season is the first week of November, so my father had his stand fairly close to the northern property line. There had been a fresh 4 inches of snow the night before, and from his stand about 200 yards away, my father noticed something across his shooting lane. Sitting for a few hours, and not seeing anything, he decided to take a walk and see what had crossed. What he found there were 16-inch-long human-like footprints. He and I had similar experiences previously, so we knew it could be from a Sasquatch. At any rate, on to the story. It was a Wednesday around 3 p.m. Beaver trapping season had just opened the weekend prior, and I was ready to set some traps. I took my ATV to a large pond on our property and was going to set a couple 330 conibears. It was a very strange day. Most of the snow from earlier in the month had melted, and the woods were wet. The first thing I noticed when I shut the ATV off was that there was absolutely no sound in the forest at all. I didn't hear the wind, a deer, a bird, anything. The clouds were nearly touching the treetops, so I walked about 150 yards off the trail to the pond. I was halfway through setting up a trap when I heard 3 consecutive wood knocks. I knew what it was and immediately unholstered my black powder, 44, and shot across the pond hoping to scare it away. After 10 minutes of standing still, listening without hearing anything, I finished setting the trap. When I bent down to set the second one, I heard another 3 knocks. This time, the sound was much closer, so I dropped my trap and started running back to the ATV. I made up that 150 yards in no time. Jumping logs and such without thinking about it, I got the ATV started and looked up and saw a very large, hairy creature walking away, which soon stopped and glanced back at me. The creature was at least 8 feet tall and had a cinnamon-colored coat and human facial features. I got out of there as fast as I could. The next day I went back to check my trap and grabbed the one I had left unset. I had a large beaver and was pretty excited until I found my other trap. It was about 12 feet in the air in a tree. I still hunt as often as I can, but I haven't trapped that pond since. Back in 1992, when I was 12 years old, I went fishing with my uncles and cousins. It was getting late. Me and my cousins were around the same age. We were in the back of my uncle's truck, while my uncle drove back to my grandmother's. It was around 2 in the morning. As we were driving down the dark country road, I noticed this strange light in the sky that seemed like it was following us. I told my cousins, "Hey, look," at which point they noticed the light as well. We initially thought it was an airplane, and soon my uncles pulled into a country gas station. The moment my uncle turned off the truck, we told them to look. They looked and they thought it was a low-flying airplane as well, which seemed logical since there was a small airfield nearby. A few moments later, two state troopers showed up, parked at the gas station, and came out of their vehicle. They lit up a cigarette and started talking. Another small pickup truck showed up and I heard this older man telling the troopers about the strange lights in the sky. I wanted to tell the troopers about the light we saw, but my uncles came out of the gas station and we took off. We arrived at my grandma's house and my uncle told us to go inside and go to sleep. My grandparents went to Mexico for vacation and to visit family, so nobody was home but just us. They told us they would be back in the morning, at which point we went inside. We talked about the fish we caught and made jokes. Then, I brought up the light in the sky. The moment I brought it up, we heard the neighbor's dog barking around the house. We went outside to see what was going on when we heard a low humming sound, and I looked up and saw the same strange light close to the house. We all screamed and ran inside the house. We locked the doors and turned off all the lights. Something that looked like lightning outside rang out, and we could still hear the humming sound. The dog stopped barking, and while we hid under the table in the kitchen, the lightning continued outside the windows, but there was no thunder afterwards, and not even a single cloud in the sky above. We all stayed awake till my uncle returned the next morning, and we then told them what happened. They looked at each other before they told us the dogs were barking at their house as well, and their girlfriend saw the same kind of lightning. Everyone in the room just stood there looking at each other. There was no other explanation except that we experienced a UFO. This story probably won't sound scary, but it is easily the most chilling experience of my life. I've recently gotten into watching Urbex videos on YouTube and wanted to get into the hobby myself. We have a mansion not too far from here that's abandoned, and so I figured I'd start there. The place is called Ivy Manor Farm. It was owned by a physician in the 1900s, but the owner left without a word. He once released a patient saying she was healthy, who then returned to the small town that we live in and stabbed a girl in the town square. Enough background though. Having found the ideal location, I decided I would head in that night, under the cover of darkness. It was raining, and with my hood up, I made my way to the fallen iron fence. As I did this, I couldn't help but notice all the cool scenery, like an old car and a pool out back. I took out my camera and began taking photos, but as I did, a rhythmic clicking sound filled the air that was followed by a psychotic laughter that left my hair standing on their ends. The laughter came from the only room I had avoided at this point, the basement. My fight or flight instinct kicked in, and even as a 20-year-old 6'5 male, I decided to get the heck out of there. Running toward the front door, I couldn't help but notice a warm glow coming from beneath the floor. I stopped and decided to see what it was, A done decision, I know. I felt terrified, as when I went down the glow I found a man swimming in trunks, spinning in an office chair cackling. That was it. Urban exploration wasn't for me at all. I quickly turned and ran, knocking over a gas canister as I did. At that point, I could hear something scurrying up the basement steps as I rushed outside and out the gateway to the mansion. I turned just in time to see the creepy guy in the swimming truck smiling and another two figures further away. Needless to say, my urban exploration days are through. I've never gone back, nor have I tried urban exploration ever again. This happened 10 plus years ago, so I'm paraphrasing for all parties. It's not the creepiest story ever, but it's definitely unsettling to say the least. My dad and I were hiking on this mountain trail that was really steep and treacherous. It's not an exaggeration. At some points, I was worried I'd fall to my death over the edge if I took one misstep. It wasn't a long hike, but it was definitely super, super challenging. Eventually, we made it to the top. We had brought some food with us, so we sat down and started snacking on it. Maybe around 10 minutes later, this guy comes out of the bush. A lone bush. He literally came out of the bush. It was so obvious he was hiding there, let me just say. And I'm not trying to sound like a rude person or anything, but this guy was really big. An unhealthily large man. My first thought was, how did this guy even make it up here? Again, I don't want to be rude, but I was genuinely curious as how he made it up there. I was out of breath, and so was my dad. The guy was not out of breath at all. The interaction with this guy was very odd, but it went like this. The guy asked, "Hey, can I sit with you guys?" Before we could answer, he sat down on the rock next to us and started talking. He asked the most cliche, creepy as heck questions like, "Where do you guys live? And how old are you? Are you married? I was 14, by the way. And you're so pretty." My dad immediately stands up, gives me a head nod like, "Let's get away from him and leave," and tells the guy he just wants to spend time with his daughter. My dad was super polite, but I could tell he was thrown off by this guy. We start moving around our area, and the guy says, "Hey, F you!" pretty aggressively. My dad says something along the lines of, "Watch your mouth, my kid is here." We did have a rifle on us, and that didn't seem to register to the guy. He definitely saw it, but it was on my dad's back. The guy just sat there on the rock. He would not go away. He was staring us down. I guess in his defense, there wasn't really anywhere for him to go except back into the bush or down the mountain. He just kept staring at us. He gave me the most uneasy, uncomfortable feeling. This situation was classic scary movie stuff. But my first thought was, he was probably some mentally disabled guy, or maybe mentally disturbed or something like that, and was probably just harmless. But after we moved, he started threatening us with stuff like, "I'll beat your butt, and you better not talk to me like that." Like what? We were pretty nice in asking you to leave us alone. That's when alarms really started to go off in my head. The situation really started to escalate pretty quickly after the threats. So my dad takes the rifle off his back and whispers to me to stand up and start walking down the mountain, and he'll be right behind me. The next part is all from hearing movement and footsteps because I was following my dad's orders and walking back down the mountain. But I could hear the guy starting after my dad, asking why we were leaving. My dad turns around and screams at him to back off. I could hear the click from the safety and thought this is seriously flipping happening. He was trying to be a badass. The gun was for bears. The mountain was known for bears, and we had food on us. After the guy finally backed off, my dad caught up to me and told me everything was fine and just keep walking. We made it back to our car, locked the doors, and drove out of there as fast as we could. To this day, though, I don't know how that guy got up there. People hunt in other parts of the mountain and hike there during the appropriate seasons. You legally cannot live on that mountain. There's nowhere to put a house. How long he'd been up there, and what in the world his intentions were, I guess I'll never know. I'm just glad we had the rifle. That guy was definitely more dangerous than any bear out there that day. It was summer of 2018, and like many others, I went on vacation to a place somewhat isolated from people, just to get away. I had gone with my two cousins to a ranch we own in Lake Paris, California. For reference, I will call one M and the older one J, M being the same age as me at 24, and J at 28. I had been planning to go visit them for almost 3 years, but I hadn't gotten the chance, due to transportation and always having to work. I only had just gotten the chance to be able to travel because I had crashed my brand new Ninja motorcycle in September of 2017, breaking my collarbone and 3 of my ribs, rendering me unable to work. While recovering, I was living in the Bay Area by San Francisco, and to think I wanted to ride 8 to 10 hours out to my family's ranch on a bike, that would have been suicide, since I'm not at all familiar with the roads. Anyways, I had finally gone to visit, and I thought it was going to take much of my stress away. In many ways, it did. But during my time there, it seemed like things just started to get worse. Not only did my girl dump me, but strange things started happening again, like my uncle's mom passing away, and along with my cousin M that was sitting next to me at the time seeing her spirit late one night at around 2 a.m. We both started to see weird things. We both turned to each other one night to see something peeking into the room at the same time, and I asked him, did you see that? I stood up to see if it was my other cousin trying to creep us out. When I walked out the door, I saw my great-aunt's face and top torso turning and fading away into thin air. I automatically ran into the room on my tippy-toes and both hands on my chest, repeating what I saw to her over and over again. Well, 2 days after, in between everything that was happening at the time, me and my cousin Jay decided to go smoke a bowl under the large evergreen tree in the back, by where all the cow, chickens, and goats are kept, with the intention of avoiding my aunts and uncles smelling what we were up to, out of respect. So, it was a bright sunny day. I and Jay, along with our huge all-black 200-pound Great Dane Abigail, was just chilling on a wooden bench under the evergreen, staring out to some of the hills, where there were no more or 2 or 3 miles away, I noticed a large black horse, pacing side to side in the middle of the two biggest hills, behind what looked like a barbed wire fence that ran along the top of the hills, paring the sides of the old abandoned building that looked like it was used to be a slaughterhouse. Really thinking nothing of it, I looked at the dog laying in front of us, whose head and ears were both aiming straight up at the black figure high up between the hills. When I realized just how long that thing had been there, I had seen it come up from the hills about 15 or 20 minutes earlier, and Abigail had not taken her eyes off of it the entire time. So I turned to my cousin to tell him about the horse, and if he had ever seen it there before, just to find him frozen with the bong and lighter in his hands also looking right at it. He had this look of terror on his face. When I looked back towards the thing, I saw it was standing on its 2 back legs and facing right at us. Its front legs were side by side as it was trying to intimidate us or something. We were all just frozen, including the dog. She didn't make a move. I think either she was used to it or she felt safe with having us around. After almost a minute of looking at it, it seemed to shrink before our eyes, till it almost looked human-like. When I said to Jay, "Holy crap, I think that might be a skinwalker." He quickly responded by telling me to shut up and to ignore it. He almost begged me to be quiet. It went from what looked like a 10-foot tall creature thing to like 6 foot in only a few seconds. Judging by the old building only about 100 yards away from it, I know these things and what they're capable of. I'm Mexican born in California, but Mexican culture has a big part of my life. Along with its folklore and older stories of witchcraft and people who practice its deeper roots, Mexican culture is right up there next to Native American culture, if not the same. I'm scared to even mention any of this to anyone, but it's good for a cause. It's time that people know the truths and secrets of humans and unhuman things that are so oblivious to humanity. To that thing dwelling in the hills of Lake Paris, stay the hell away from our family, and hopefully I'll never have to see this thing again. Also, importance to the evergreen tree that we were at. The evergreen tree is known to be used by witch doctors in Mexico to keep evil and bad spirits away. Maybe not just a coincidence that there is a big-ass one in the middle of our ranch. I don't know why, but that dog would not leave my side for 2.5 weeks when I was there. Even my cousins pointed it out. Jay also told me that I'm weird, but in a good way, whatever that means. Well, to start this off, I grew up in the 1970s in a small town in North Carolina. Well, it was almost too small to be called a town, with only a school and a couple of small shops. I'm guessing you can imagine how boring it would be to be a teenager there, and it would have been so if it wasn't for the woods. The neighborhood that I lived in was backed up to a big forest that spread out for about 3 miles. And it's where I spent most of my teenage years with my two best friends, Levi and Connor. They both were in my class at the time. We were all 15. Levi lived across the street. He was smart and kind of quiet, unlike Connor, who lived down at the bad side of the neighborhood. Connor was a troublemaker, always getting sent to the dean's office at least once a week. He was loud, obnoxious, and a natural leader, always finding something for us to do. Be it legal or not, when he was around, we were never bored. It was the beginning of the summer holidays, and Levi had called for me. We went down to get Connor, and he was messing around with his younger brother's scooter in the front yard. We asked him if he wanted to go into the woods, and he said yes. Now, just in case this may be necessary, Connor had almost black shaggy hair, the most beautiful eyes. One was a light blue while the other was a brownish color. He always wore scuffy red Converse shoes and a denim jacket, and of course, I just had the biggest crush on him. While Levi had styled brown hair, brown eyes, and freckles and was considerably shorter than me. Then there was myself, a red-headed brown-eyed girl that had quite a lot of people scared of me due to me being hyper. I was always ready to go somewhere or do something, and I was always talking about something. Anyway, we made our way into the woods and started walking into a random direction. We did this for fun, just to see what happens. Usually, we would try to get lost and try to find our way back, which most of the time just led us to being late for dinner and getting sent to our beds early, or worse for worse, getting grounded. But we did it anyway. We were making our way along a deer trail that I didn't think we had ever been on before, when Connor found a pile of crap and, of course, dipped a stick into it and then tried to chase us with it. Levi and I, of course, freaked out and scattered. Neither of us wants to be smeared with crap. I ran off, and luckily for me, Connor followed Levi instead in the opposite direction. After a while of them not coming back, I began to think they had left me and I was furious. I was walking down the way I had seen them run, when suddenly something stuck out the bush and grabbed me. I let out a surprised yelp and Connor shushed me, only for me to shout at him scaring me. Only when I saw the look on his face, I decided that I shouldn't be talking and I shut my mouth. Connor whispered to me, "You have got to see this," and began to lead me through the bushes, and further we went. The more and more we went, the more I could smell something disgusting.
we came across something green. Levi started staring at the ground with a weird expression on his face. I was about to ask what was wrong, but Connor tugged me past him a few more feet, away to where there was this ditch, and in the ditch, I could only describe as something out of a nightmare. It was a body. It was a purple-blue color. It almost looked swollen. The stench was so terrible I had to cover my mouth with my jumper so as not to gag. I backed up to where Levi was. Connor stood looking into the trench for about 5 more seconds before he walked back over to us. "Cool, huh?" he said with a grin. Levi gave him a disgusting look before saying, "No, it ain't cool. We need to go home and call the police." "What? Why?" What do you mean, why? There's a body dumped in the woods, Connor. It's clearly been murdered." "No, man, it's so cool. We cannot get the police. If we do, they're gonna take this away and think we were the killers." "Why would they think it was us?" "Because that's what the police do, man." "Don't be stupid, Connor. You can't stop me." "Fuck's sake, man. If you get the police out here, this'll just be on the news, and we'll get questioned by everybody. They'll probably set out a curfew, they'll ban us from going into the forest, there'll be police everywhere, and then, you know what? Summer will freaking suck." I had just been quietly watching the argument take place, not really caring about what happened. But that got me, and there was no way in hell I was going to let my summer get ruined. "Connor's right." "What? You're not serious?" "Levi, we have the whole summer left to do whatever we want. Do you really want to spend it inside with a curfew?" "Yeah, man, 2 against 1. Come on, you can't do anything stupid." Levi looked crushed. "Fine, but I'm not coming near this again." Connor had let out a whoop of joy, and we had made our way home listening to him talk about how cool it would be and how this would be our secret. Well, the secret didn't last very long, as by the end of the week, Connor had shown all the rest of our friends, and it was a miracle that nobody did call the police. But I guess that just goes to show how close everybody was. We were like one big family, and almost like all families, we had our secrets. The body remained there for the rest of the summer. I only went up a few more times, and it had gotten less interesting, as each time we went, there were only bones left. Anyway, on the last week of summer vacation, we decided to have a big campout with all of our friends. There was me, Levi, Connor, Josh, and Walsh. He was a loud-mouthed boy with mousy hair and blue eyes. Alice was there as well. She was a quiet girl with straight brown hair. Courtney was there, who I could only describe as the only girl I actually saw as a friend, probably because she was the only one who put thought into things and didn't have a bratty attitude. And then there was Kenny, the kid whose garden we were camping in. He had sandy blonde hair, brown eyes, freckles. His dad owned the biggest garden, so of course we could camp there. And as an added bonus, Kenny's garden backed right up into the woods. And even though we had promised Kenny's mom that we wouldn't go into the woods after dark, we were definitely planning to. But unfortunately, our plans were foiled by a good old Mother Nature, as she decided to make it rain. So all 7 of us piled into this big tent, which belonged to Courtney. We played cards for about 2 hours, making up new games with crazy rules. Joss even suggested that we play strip poker, only to have a shoe chucked at him and to be told that if he carried on acting like a pedo, we would send him home. He quieted down after that, and we carried on playing until Kenny began complaining that we were going to run out of oxygen. This went on for a good 10 minutes before he decided to unzip the tent and stick out his head so he could breathe. "Hey guys, the rain stopped," said Kenny excitedly. "Seriously?" I said. "Yeah, let's go do something." We then all argued for a good 20 minutes about where we were going to go and what we were going to do. And so far, breaking into school and hanging out there was winning until Connor said, "Why don't we go see the body?" That was it. Everyone put on their shoes and coats, and Kenny took down his dollar store flashlight that he had hung from the roof of Courtney's tent. And off we went. Connor and Kenny led the way. But Kenny's flashlight, to be honest, was pretty crap, and didn't light anything very well. And I don't believe that we needed it anyway, because even though I hadn't been to the body in weeks, it was burned into my mind how to get there. The whole way there, we were talking about what it would look like now
and how creepy this all was, and then the conversation took a turn that it never had before. We began talking about who we thought the body was and why they were dead, and who had murdered them, and this scared me because it made me see it for what it really was, a dead body of a murdered person hidden by someone in the woods, and we had never reported it. I brought this issue up to Connor, who simply stated, "It's too late now, there's probably only bones left, and even if we did tell the police, we would get in trouble for holding off for so long." To this, I remained silent, and kept walking alongside Courtney and Levi, listening to Josh telling Alice some bullshit story behind us. They soon went silent, though, as we came to the ditch. Connor and Kenny stood silently at the edge, shining the flashlight into it, Kenny's mouth agape in horror. I asked what it was, and Connor shushed me and beckoned me and the rest of us over with his finger. As I came up to the edge, what I saw had freaked me out. In that ditch was something piled on top of the original body. It was wrapped in a yellow floral pattern bedsheet, and it was tied with some sort of string at the top to make it not slip off. Everyone stood silent for what felt like hours. But in reality, it was probably only a couple of seconds before Connor pulled his Stanley knife out of his pocket and descended into the ditch. Levi began to protest, but Connor turned and shushed him and whispered to Kenny to shine his light on him, to which Kenny obeyed Connor, then cut some of the string and pulled to the seat to reveal the face of a young girl. She stared up at us with a dead glaze over her eyes and a blank expression. I felt like I was going to be sick, and apparently so did Levi, as he began to violently retch and he turned away. I couldn't turn away no matter how hard I tried. I was mesmerized. Connor suddenly jumped back, with a look of sudden realization and horror, crossed his pale face as he began to scramble up the side of the ditch. Josh helped him up, and a chorus of what happened and what was it began, only to have him frantically shush us. With a shaking voice he said, "It's dry as bone." A feeling of absolute dread settled in my stomach. If you don't get what the big deal was, it had rained only an hour earlier, and everything was wet, and this body was dry, which means that it had been put here recently. Everyone was silent. Then there was a noise behind us across the ditch, and my heart was in my throat. As we turned around, and Kenny quickly pointed his flashlight at where the noise was coming from, then, click. Suddenly from across the ditch came an extremely bright light, illuminating us and making the person holding the light impossible to see. "Run!" yelled Connor, grabbing me by the arm, and everyone sprinted, and whoever it was with the light sprinted to where we were. They were running violently, randomly illuminating trees and brushes that scared the shit out of some deer. And then suddenly, it went off. I felt my heart stop and Connor was muttering, "Shit, shit, shit, where the heck is he?" under his breath as we ran for our lives. I tried listening to hear if a guy was still coming after us, but everything was so blurry I just couldn't keep track of who was doing what and where the noises were. Levi stumbled, and a couple of seconds later, face streaked with tears of fear, followed by Josh. We huddled together and everyone began blabbering out what the heck was going on, and who was that, and what do we do if he finds us. But then Courtney spoke up. Where's Alice? Everyone went silent and looked towards the woods in fear, until Levi spoke up. Kenny, go get your dad. Connor looked over to glare at Levi before turning to Kenny and barking, "No, Kenny, don't get your dad. Let's think about this, okay?" What do you mean, let's think about this? He will call the police, and don't you think the police are gonna believe us? I don't think so. This arguing went on for probably 5 more minutes, until eventually, everybody shushed up. Kenny begins pounding on his back door, and this goes on for about 5 minutes before Mr. Stokes opens the new door with a red face. "What are you guys doing? What are you playing, boys? 2 in the goddamn morning," he hollered. "Dad, Alice is in the woods." "What? She ran in when we were playing tag and she hasn't come back out. We think she got lost." Mr. Stokes stared off into the woods for a bit, squinting, trying to see beyond the tree line before muttering an okay and repeating into the house,
to only 5 minutes return with a big flashlight. He stomped off into the woods and we all waited for about 20 minutes before he returned and said, "Fun's home, kids. Go home, get your fathers, and tell them to bring flashlights." And that was it. We all went home, told our parents what was going on, and the men went into the woods to look for Alice. While the woman stood around in Kenny's backyard, we were all told to stay at home, to which I didn't. I crossed the street and knocked on Levi's door. He answered it and I stepped inside, and apparently Connor had the same idea, as he was sitting on the sofa in Levi's room, eating some chips. "Do you think they'll find her?" I asked quietly. "Yeah, she's probably just panicked and got herself lost," said Connor. "And what if he got her? What if she's dead? What are we gonna do then?" said Levi, as he stood by the window looking into the dark street. Suddenly, the sound of police sirens cut through the air. "Oh no," mumbled Levi as the police cars drove down the road to Kenny's house. We watched as two police cars pulled up and the men came out carrying big flashlights. They walked around the back into the woods. After that, I and Kenny went home, and I watched out my window as suddenly 5 more police cars appeared at my parents' house. It was around 6 in the morning at this point. I asked my mother what had happened, and she told me that they found a body in the woods, and that it wasn't looking good. The next day, the police interviewed all of us, and we all stuck to Connor's story. They didn't find Alice, and just like he said, it would be there as news coverage. A ban on us was going into the woods, and there was a curfew for 9 p.m. When we went back to school, there was an assembly of safety for strangers. They found Alice in the end, 12 days later, chopped up into little pieces and crammed into a garbage can on the side of the road about 10 miles from her house. I have my own kids now, and since I've lost contact with all of my childhood friends apart from Levi, who I now have a child to, and he recently told me that Kenny had been killed due to an overdose, we were invited to a funeral along with the rest of the kids I grew up with. I will not be attending that funeral. I once rented a room in a small house in Hartford, Connecticut. This house was actually quite nice, with hardwood floors and a stove that heated the entire house during winter. You walked up some flat, circular stone steps to access the front door, and the landlady had a pretty garden out front. The back of the house was a bit of a mess, and she had, as I soon discovered, a hoarding disorder. Although I could see her home was cluttered, I simply needed a place to stay. One entire room was blocked off because she had so much stuff in it. Still, the room I was renting was charming and the bed was comfortable. I shared it with her and her one child, who was still in school. The bathroom was large enough to share, and there was a washer and dryer and Wi-Fi. Another person briefly rented the room downstairs before she bounced and checked out. I started having odd experiences in this house. It had an aura of stress to it. For instance, one night, I was alone in the house, as the landlady had gone to spend the weekend with her fiancé. It was cold enough that she put wood chips in the stove before leaving. I enjoyed watching the flickering in the darkness. The living room took on a calmer feeling, like the fire inside the stove began to stir. All of a sudden, I had the awful feeling that someone was standing next to me. Spooked, I went upstairs into my room and shut the door. The next weird experience came when I was doing laundry in her messy basement. By this time, I was growing tired of the incredible mess. She kept the living room tidy, but that was about it. I wandered around the dark room as the washer spun, then stopped in a kind of odd horror. Someone had spray-painted the words "fuck" in blood on the back of the steps. Entirely chilled, I found my Bible and prayed over the words. I wondered if Satanists had lived in the house or witches at one point. I started to feel like I was living in the presence of evil. The room I was staying in grew colder, night after night, literally. I began to feel like I was suffocating and struggled to sleep. One night, I rolled over, sleepy and chilled,
and looked at the digital alarm clock. It was around 4:20 a.m. I looked towards the window at the far end of the room, where she kept a round, mirrored coffee table. There was a dark mass there, with no face, just staring at me. I could see curly hair, but no distinct features. It was hovering, almost as if it was lying on its side. I screamed and turned on the light. I asked my landlady the next day if she had heard me screaming, but she denied it. I knew she had once been married to a man who evidently had abused her. When I spoke to her boyfriend, I decided to take a risk. I inquired about my landlady's husband, who was now deceased. Her fiancé told me that the neighbors had described him as evil. I hesitated when I asked if he had curly hair. He replied in the affirmative. I am convinced that I saw some sort of imprint of this person, manifested at a spiritual sensitivity, which I had possessed for most of my life. Later on, I saw a photo of this husband and the landlady's child. He indeed had dark curly hair. This happened to me when I was about 10 years old, and it still haunts me. This was around 1969 or 1970, and pop bottles was how us kids came up with money for candy or whatever. I would search everywhere for them. Construction sites were gold mines. I would regularly search abandoned properties. I was a little braver than my friends, so I would always have a little more money to show for my efforts. There was a large and creepy house, by itself on the outside of our neighborhood in our small little town, that was clearly abandoned. I never went in there. Something about it just felt different and a little scary, even to me. But having nothing to show for my pop bottle search, I decided to quickly check it out. I should have stuck with my instincts, but I ignored them and went in, which was a big mistake. The walls were painted an awful shade of green, even the ceilings, but the chilling thing was the mirrors. There must have been hundreds and hundreds of them. They were literally everywhere. Many were in the floor broken, and you couldn't even walk through without stepping on pieces of them. They were of all sizes and shapes, hanging on wires or frames, or just stands or shelves, or just leaning against the walls. You could see all around you, and every room you went. I never imagined something like this, and it blew my mind. I couldn't process what I was seeing because it horrified me. My heart started pounding and I felt dizzy. It was way too much and I got out of there, and I didn't think my feet even touched the steps leaving the place. I sat by a tree for a long time and got myself together before going home. I was soaking wet from sweating and feeling very sick. I will never know who put those mirrors up or what they were afraid of, but that image has stayed with me my entire life. I even hate the shade of green when I see it. They had a house of mirrors at a fair, and just looking at it made me sick. Even at a department store that has a large display of backed by mirrors, I have to look away. My days of exploring abandoned places have come to an end. You never know what's going to be on inside. It might just give you a phobia you're stuck with for the rest of your life. This happened back when I was 12 or 13 years old. Now, a little backstory here. My dad and I volunteered at a bird banding station. If you don't know what bird banding is, it is where researchers put small metal bands on the legs of birds, and then release them, to track their migration patterns. We'd set out mist nets in the woods to catch the birds. We used nets instead of traditional traps so we wouldn't harm the birds. So anyway, the guy who owned the bird banding station and the entire property, let's call him R, would let me wander the woods. While he was collecting birds out of the nets, R's property was massive, with woods, countryside, marshland, and you name it, all out here on the edge of a small town. Now back to the story. It was a cool summer morning. I was wandering in my usual part of the forest. It wasn't long before I noticed that it was unusually silent, which was odd. I usually hear at least one thrush or blue jay, but there was nothing. All of a sudden, in the distance, I hear what sounds like a distressed baby deer or cat. Being the curious animal lover I was, I followed the noise. However, as I got closer to the sound, it seemed to grow a lot farther away. It wasn't long before I came to the edge of our property. The wailing sounded like it was coming from nearby one minute, and then sounding very far away the next. Despite being confused and a little creeped out, I for some reason still followed it. However, a few minutes later, I came across a small deer blind. I looked inside to see if anyone was messing with me, but there was nobody there. When I got a better look at the blind, I noticed something a bit off. There were massive slashes on the sides. They looked as if a person had slashed them with a knife, or an animal's claw marks. But there were no bears in this part of Michigan. Odd. So being a curious 13-year-old, I continued on my way to finding this distressed animal. I was walking along the edge of Ars Woods, trying not to go too far. I'm starting to get frustrated. Where the heck was this scream coming from? So being the naive little girl I was, I mimicked the noise that I was hearing to try to find my way back to the animal, to see if it would show itself. Not a minute passes by and I hear a noise that I will never forget. It sounded like a dog's growl, mixed with a buck's grunt. No deer sounded like this though. Something in my brain told me to get the heck out of there, and I did, leaping over twigs and branches until I'm in R's front yard. As I'm making my way towards his house, I hear the same sound, growling, coming from the woods, about 10 meters behind me at the very least. So instead, I run towards the research sack. Since R wasn't at the house and the doors would most likely be locked, I knew that no one would believe me. So I just said that a deer growled at me. However, I've heard deer grunts and snorts all my life, and they do not even compare to the animal that I heard. It didn't sound like a coyote or a dog either. Although, I never saw the thing. I believe that it was trying to get me off the property to do who knows what. I'm guessing that it might have been a Wendigo, since they can mimic noises of other animals and even voices. I also live near the Great Lakes, a hot spot for Wendigo sightings, maybe even a skinwalker. But they tend to be more in the western states. So, whenever you're in the woods and something doesn't seem right, don't just brush it off. Thanks for watching! I hope you enjoyed this compilation of the scariest stories from the middle of nowhere from 2018. If you enjoyed these stories, be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the Swamp, subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things strange and anomalous. If you guys haven't yet, come join me on Instagram and Twitter. It's a lot of fun. My Instagram is SwampDwellerOfficial, and my Twitter is @iSwampDweller. I would love to talk to you guys on there and see you guys more outside of the YouTube channel. If you have a story you'd like to share in a future video, be sure to send it in to swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story. I'll see you all soon with another creepy video.